Part 1. 1974 to 1976. Folder 4. 4.1. In Ubik, the forward-moving force of time, or time force expressed as an ergic field, has ceased. All changes result from that. Forms regress. The substrate is revealed. Cooling entropy is allowed to set in unimpeded. Equilibrium is affected by the vanishing of the forward-moving time force field. The bare bones, so to speak, of the world, our world, are revealed. We see the logos addressing the many living entities. Note: Logos is an important concept that litters the pages of the exegesis. An ancient Greek word with a wide variety of meanings, logos can mean word, speech, reason, in Latin, ratio, or giving an account of something. For Heraclitus, to whom Dick frequently refers, logos is the universal law that governs the cosmos, of which most human beings are somnolently ignorant. Dick certainly has this latter meaning in mind, but most importantly, logos refers to the opening of the Gospel of John, which invokes the word that becomes flesh in the person of Christ. The human faculty for the intuition of logos is nous, as Dick transliterates it, or intellection, which also appears all over the exegesis. But the core of Dick's vision is Gnostic. It suggests a specifically mystical contact with a transmundane or alien god who is identified with logos and who can communicate in the form of a ray of light, non-objective graphics, or some other visionary transfer. The novelty of Dick's Gnostic vision is that the divine communicates through information that has a kind of electrostatic life of its own. Simon Critchley, SC. End note. We see the logos addressing the many living entities, assisting and advising them. Note: Neoplatonism is crossed with thermodynamics to provide a framework for Dick to think through his experiences here. The entire universe can be comprehended as subject to an imperative, more entropy. While entropy is usually associated with the negativity of disorder, here it functions as something like a revelation. The bare bones, so to speak, of our world are revealed. And while the revelation is a regression, it enables an insight into the nature of reality. The divine, Atman, is perceived within all things for Dick, even as the vehicle of this revelation is entropy. In the guise of noise, he receives a clarifying signal. Richard Doyle, R.D. End note. We are now aware of the Atman everywhere, the press of time on everything having been abolished. Reveals many elements underlying our phenomena. If time stops, this is what takes place, these changes. Not frozenness, but revelation. There are still the retrograde forces remaining at work, and also underlying positive forces other than time. The disappearance of the force field we call time reveals both good and bad things, which is to say, coaching entities, Runciter, who is the Logos, the Atman, Ubik, Ella. It isn't a static world, but it begins to cool. What is missing is a form of heat, the Aten. The Logos, Runciter, can tell you what to do, but you lack the energy, heat, force, to do it, i.e., time. The Logos is not a retrograde energetic life form, but the Holy Spirit, the Parakletos, is. If the Logos is outside time, imprinting, then, the Holy Spirit, HS, stands at the right or far or completed end of time, toward which the field flow moves, the time flow. It receives time, the negative terminal, so to speak. Related to the Logos in terms of embodying word directives and world-organizing powers, but at a very weak level, it can progressively, to a greater degree, overcome the time field and flow back against it, into it, impinging and penetrating, It moves in the opposite direction. It is the anti-time. So it is correct to distinguish it from the Logos, which, so to speak, reaches down into the time flow from outside, from eternity, or the real universe. The HS is in time, and is moving, retrograde. Like tachyons, its motion is a temporal one, opposite to ours and the normal direction of universal causal motion. Note: the tachyon is a hypothetical subatomic particle that moves faster than light. End note. Equilibrium is achieved by the Logos operating in three directions: from behind us as causal, time, pressure; from above, then the final form, the very weak HS drawing toward perfection each form. But now equilibrium as we know it is being lost in favor of a growing ratio of retrograde teleology. This implies we are entering, have entered, a unique time, nearing completion of the manifold forms. Last pieces are going into place in the overall pattern. The task or mode of the HS is completing, not beginning, not renewing or maintaining, but bringing to the end, to the close. An analogy would be the transit of a vehicle from one planet to another. First stage is the gravity of planet of origin, then equilibrium of both planets in terms of their pull, then the growing pull of the destination gravity field as it gradually takes over and completes the journey. Beginning, middle, end. At last one senses the receiving field engage, and then correct. When I wrote Ubik, I constructed a world, universe, which differed from ours in only one respect. It lacked the driving force forward of time. Note: until the mid-1960s, Dick's novels explored isolation, entropy, and psychological withdrawal. But with Ubik, 1966, his work becomes progressively more concerned with redemption and rebirth. After a team of anti-telepaths is injured in an explosion, the novel develops a dreamlike quality inspired by the Tibetan Book of the Dead. As the reality around them devolves, the characters begin to succumb to entropy themselves. A magical cure-all product begins to show up in advertisements. Ubik, which comes in an aerosol spray can and promises to combat the forces of encroaching chaos. Ubik is clearly an allegory for the Christian concept of grace. Author Michael Bishop has written that Ubik is whatever gets you through the dark night of the soul. In the exegesis, Ubik becomes shorthand for redemption. David Gill, D.G. End note. That time in our own actual universe could weaken or even go entirely away did not occur to me, because at that point I did not conceive time as a force at all, vide the Soviet astrophysicist's theory. I thought of it in Kantian terms, as a mode of subjective perception. Now I believe that time at this point in the expansion of the universe, or for some other reasons, has in fact actually begun to weaken, at least in ratio to certain other fields. Therefore, this being true, a measure of the Ubik experience could be anticipated. I have indeed had that experience, or a measure thereof. That is, time still drives on, but counterforces have surfaced and impinge, laying bare the Ubik landscape, only for a few moments, that is, temporarily. Then, time resumes its sovereignty. What one would expect is twofold. One, material, e.g. information, images, weak energy fields, etc., from the future leaking or bleeding back to us while we continue on. Two, abrupt lurches back on our part to recent prior time periods, like a needle on a record being anti-skated back to a prior groove, which it has already played, and then playing on from there, as if nothing happened. Note: this word information has become so commonplace that it is important to mark out its history here. Dick is writing a quarter of a century after Claude Shannon published his Mathematical Theory of Communication with Warren Weaver, wherein he defined the quantity of surprise value contained in any message as its entropy. Shannon named this value entropy because he was using equations drawn from the thermodynamic measure of entropy in a system, Maxwell's equations. The paradox here, one that Dick grappled with, is presented by the fact that information, whose etymology suggests the existence of a pattern or form, is found to be mathematically equivalent to the amount of disorder in a closed system. That is, entropy is both the measure of the content of a message and a measure of its disorder. Maximum entropy is maximum message. The exegesis is a working through of this paradox. Was Vallis signal or noise? R.D. End note. The latter we would not be consciously aware of, although subcortical responses, and perhaps a vague sense of amnesia, dreams, etc., would tell us that something was wrong. But the leakage back to us from the future, not by us, but to us, that we would be aware of, calling it ESP, etc., and yet be unable to account for it. But what is most telling is that in March, at the initial height of the Holy Other pouring into me, when I saw the universe as it is, I saw as the active agent a gold and red illuminated letter, like plasmatic entity, from the future, arranging bits and pieces here, arranging what time drove forward. Later I concluded that I had seen the Logos. What is important is that this was perceptual to me, not an intellectual inference or thought about what might exist. It came here from the future. It was, is, alive. It had a certain small power or energy and great wisdom. It was, is, holy. It not only was visible around me, but evidently, this is the same energy which entered me. It was both inside and out. So the Logos, or whatever it was, this plasmatic life form from the future which I saw satisfies, as near as I can fathom, most of the theoretical criteria above. Note: the paradox of entropy, as a measure of disorder and order, is for Dick temporarily overcome. It is only through the breakdown of his ordinary reality that he can be informed by the suprasensual reality of the divine letter, the Logos. Here, as in the famous opening of the Gospel of John, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God," language becomes an active agent that is actually prior to material reality. John 1:1 is additionally instructive because of what information theory would describe as the sentence's redundancy. The semantic content of "in the beginning" reiterates the line's formal content, since "in the beginning" is indeed in the beginning of the gospel. "In the beginning was the Word" is, of course, in words. So here too, the signal repeats itself through its own self-reference. In this passage, Dick is treating this threefold redundancy as the Logos itself, out of which any message at all might emerge. Thus, when Dick receives this letter from the future, it is felt as salvation. The question of whether Vallis is signal or noise is abstracted another level, as information from the future pours into the present, revealing the unreal nature of linear time. R.D. End note. Also, the official Catholic Christian theories about the Holy Spirit so depicted, moving backward from the end of time, pouring into people. But if the Holy Spirit can only enter one, is only inside, then what I saw that was gold and red outside, like liquid fire, wasn't the HS, but the Logos. I think it's all the same thing, one found inner, one found outer. What difference does it make? It's only a semantic quarrel. What's important is that it comes back here from the future, is electrostatic and alive, but a weak field. It must be a form similar to radiation. However, that which caused me to see differently and to be different must be distinguished from what I saw and became. A bioplasmic Oregon-like energy entered me or rose up in me and caused changes in me. That is one enormous miracle. But the heightened awareness caused me to see a different universe, one which contained the red and gold living threads of activity in the outside world, a world enormously changed, very much like the world of Ubik. But I feel a unity between the force which changed me and the red and gold energy which I saw. From within me, as part of me, it looked out and saw itself. Letter to Peter Fitting, June 28, 1974. Note, Peter Fitting, a leftist literary critic. His most important article on Dick, Ubik, The Deconstruction of Bourgeois SF, appeared in Science Fiction Studies 2, No. 1, March 1975. End note. 4-6. Dear Peter, in regards to some of the intellectual theoretical subjects all of us discussed the day you and your friends were here to visit, I recall in particular my statement to you, which I believe you got on your tape too, that the universe is moving backward. A rather odd statement on the face of it, I admit. What I meant by that is something which at the time I could not really express, having had an experience, several in fact, but not having the terms. Now, by having read further, I have some sort of terms and would like to describe some of my personal experiences using, in a pragmatic way, the concept of tachyons, which are supposed to be particles of cosmic origin, I am quoting Arthur Koestler, which fly faster than light and consequently in a reversed time direction. They would thus, Koestler says, carry information from the future into our present, as light and X-rays from distant galaxies carrying information from the remote past of the universe into our now and here. In the light of these developments, we can no longer exclude, on a priori grounds, the theoretical possibility of precognitive phenomena. And so forth. Harper's, July 1974. Note. Arthur Koestler, 1905 to 1983. Was a Hungarian author on science and the paranormal. The quotation is from his Harper's article, Order from Disorder. End note. I had been for several months experimenting with something I read about while doing research on the brain. In particular, new discoveries on split-brain phenomena for my novel, A Scanner Darkly, I had come across the fact that the brain can transduce external fields of both high and low frequency, providing that the thermal factor is quite low. Also, I had read about which vitamins in mega dosages can improve neural firing and produce vastly increased brain efficiency. I began attempting, on the basis of what I knew, to bring on both the hemispheres of my own brain using the recipe for mega doses of the water-soluble vitamins. At the same time, I tried again and again to exclude the ordinary external electrical fields that we customarily tune into, man-made fields, which we consider signal, and at the same time, I tried to directly transduce what we usually think of as noise, in particular, weak natural electrical fields. One night I found myself flooded with colored graphics which resembled the non-objective paintings of Kandinsky and Klee, thousands of them one after the other, so fast as to resemble flash cut used in movie work. This went on for 8 hours. Each picture was balanced, had excellent harmony, and possessed idiomatic style, that of a well-known non-objective artist. I could not account for what I was seeing. This took place in the dark and was evidently phosphine activity within my eyes. But the source of the stimulation of the phosphenes was an enigma to me at the time. But I was certain that those tens of thousands of lovely, balanced, quite professional and aesthetic, harmonious graphics could not be originating within my own mind or brain. I have no facility with graphics, and besides, there were too many of them. Even Picasso, whose style predominated for over an hour, never actually painted so many, although he very likely saw that many in his own head. In later studies about the brain, I learned of an inhibiting brain fluid called GABA, gamma-aminobutyric acid, which, when its effect drops drastically, which is to say, when an external stimulus causes disinhibition and firing of a programmed sequence up to then is inhibited, such colored graphics are often experienced. So I concluded that massive, unique in my life in fact, disinhibition had taken place, although I could not identify the external stimulus nor comprehend the programmed or engrammed sequences. At the same time, in the days following, I found myself possessed with enormous energy and did a lot of unusual things. This, in fact, is what probably raised my blood pressure so much that my doctor had to hospitalize me. I was constantly active and in new ways. This tends to confirm the theory of massive disinhibition and unused neural firing along hitherto unusual neural pathways, perhaps an entire hemisphere of the brain held in readiness until then. I did not know for what. All this may have been induced by the huge doses of water-soluble vitamins I took, gram after gram of vitamin C, for instance, but I doubt it. At the same time as I experienced the release of psychic energy, to use Esther Harding's phrase, picked up by Jung, I became conscious of pathic language directed at me from all creatures. And finally, as it spread, and this is the point I'm getting at, from the direction of the sky, especially at night, I had a keen intuition that information of some kind was arriving at us all, in fact, bombarding us from sidereal space. For a time, I imagined that an ESP experiment had somehow by accident involved me, the long-range transmission of graphics. I wrote to a lab in Leningrad and told them about my experience, having at the time the feeling that the point of origin of these signals was far distant, and hence in the USSR. Now I believe the point of origin was even farther. I think that I somehow, for a short time, transduced tachyon bombardment, which comes to us constantly, and which animals utilize to engram them into performing what we call instinctive actions. I had been consciously trying to transduce external weak fields, which I know to be possible, and I know that when this is done successfully, the brain's efficiency is increased. However, I had no preconception of what fields I might transduce, except that I felt they would be natural and not man-made, and what information, if any, they might contain. I was hoping only for increased neural efficiency. I got more actual information about the future. For during the next 3 months, almost each night during sleep, I was receiving information in the form of printouts, words and sentences, letters and names and numbers, sometimes whole pages, sometimes in the form of writing paper and holographic writing, sometimes, oddly, in the form of a baby's cereal box on which all sorts of quite meaningful information was written and typed. And finally, galley proofs held up for me to read, which I was told in my dream contained prophecies about the future. And during the last 2 weeks, a huge book, again and again, with page after page of printed lines.